I know three or four neighbors.
They're new?
Yeah.
Okay. And about how many, what percentage are chanting Hare Krishna? Do you have any idea?
Among us?
Amongst all of us, yes. I just saw someone looking around, and when he saw all the other hands up, he put his hand up. All right, we'll see what we can do. And who are the neighbors who have come for the first time?
One neighbor is here. She's here. Stop.
So, we shall read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 1, The First Step in God Realization, Text 12. Please repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Please repeat. Kim,
Kim.
Pramattasya,
Pramattasya.
Bahubi,
Bahubi.
Parokshai,
Parokshai.
Hayanai,
Hayanai.
Iha,
Iha.
Varam,
Varam.
Muhurtam,
Muhurtam.
Viditam,
Viditam.
Gatate,
Gatate.
Shreyase,
Shreyase.
Yata,
Yata.
Kim pramattasya bahubi,
Kim pramattasya bahubi.
Parokshair hayanair iha,
Parokshair hayanair iha.
Varam muhurtam viditam,
Varam muhurtam viditam.
Gatate shreyase yata,
Gatate shreyase yata.
Kim pramattasya bahubi,
Kim pramattasya bahubi.
Parokshair hayanair iha,
Parokshair hayanair iha.
Varam muhurtam viditam,
Varam muhurtam viditam.
Gatate shreyase yata,
Gatate shreyase yata.
Kim,
Kim.
What is?
What is?
Pramattasya,
Pramattasya.
Of the bewildered.
Of the bewildered.
Bahubi,
Bahubi.
By many.
By many.
Parokshai.
Parokshai.
Inexperience.
Inexperience.
Hayanai.
Hayanai.
Years.
Years.
Iha.
Iha.
In this world.
In this world.
Varam.
Varam.
Better.
Better.
Muhurtam.
Muhurtam.
A moment.
A moment.
Viditam.
Viditam.
Conscious.
Conscious.
Gatate.
Gatate.
One can try for.
One can try for.
Shreyase.
Shreyase.
In the matter of the supreme interest.
In the matter of supreme interest.
Yataha.
Yataha.
By that.
By that.
Translation. What is the value of a prolonged life which is wasted, inexperienced by years in this world? Better a moment of full consciousness, because that gives one a start in searching after his supreme interest. Please repeat. What is the value of a prolonged life?
What is the value of a prolonged life?
Which is wasted.
Which is wasted.
Inexperienced by years in this world.
Inexperienced by years in this world.
Better a moment of full consciousness.
Better a moment of full consciousness.
Because that gives one a start.
Because that gives one a start.
In searching after his supreme interest.
In searching after his supreme interest.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Shukadeva Goswami instructed Maharaj Parikshit about the importance of the chanting of the holy name of the Lord by every progressive person. In order to encourage the king, who had only 7 remaining days of life, Srila Shukadeva Goswami asserted that there is no use in living hundreds of years without any knowledge of the problems of life. Better to live for a moment with full consciousness of the supreme interest to be fulfilled. So there are 2 words in Sanskrit, shreyas and prayas. Prayas means immediate benefit or sense gratification. And shreyas means ultimate benefit or Krishna consciousness. People who are ignorant, like children, they want prayas. They want immediate gratification, except for Shakshi Gopal. But ordinary children, they just want to play and enjoy. And their parents have to convince them that you must go to school, you must learn. If you just spend your time playing and enjoying and are not educated, you won't have the knowledge, you won't have the tools that you require later in life to be successful. So even though the children like to just play and sport, their guardians or their parents oblige them to go to school because they know that being educated will help them in the long run. So shreyas is one's ultimate good. And prayas is one's like immediate gratification. So spiritually, most people today are so ignorant, they're just like children. They're spending their time playing, trying to accumulate toys and playing with them. They even say something like, you know, the winner
is the one who dies with the most toys wins.
Yeah, the one who dies with the most toys wins. Well, whoever says that is a loser. Because they don't get the point of life. They don't know what it means to win. They're in illusion, in complete illusion. So, the Vedic scriptures tell us what is the ultimate aim of life. The ultimate aim of life is not to stay in the material world and suffer and die. You know, the aim of life is to realize one's relationship with Krishna and go back home, back to Godhead. There's a very rich man in Santa Barbara named Ty Warner who owns a hotel on Butterfly Beach called the Biltmore Four Seasons. And he bought up a large property and I think several adjoining properties at the end of the block which runs along the ocean. It's a beautiful property. And he's building a huge mansion. He's like a billionaire. He invented Beanie Babies. I don't know if any of you have the fortune or misfortune to know about Beanie Babies. But he invented Beanie Babies, and apart from owning the hotel and other enterprises, I think he made a fortune with Beanie Babies. And, you know, I walk by there, and I actually think it's sort of sad because he's putting so much effort into the house. I mean, tremendous effort. It's been going on for years. And, I mean, I'm sure he's living there now, but they just keep building more and doing landscaping and bringing in palm trees and just... And I really think, like, how long is he going to be able to live there? You know? He's investing so much into this house. But how long is he going to be able to live there? And then what's going to happen to it afterwards? And it's sort of sad that he doesn't have any better engagement. You know, that's... So, most people are like that. They want to... They don't know, that's the thing. They don't... They're like children building sandcastles in the sand. They don't think that, you know, by the end of the day, the tide is going to come in and wash away the sandcastle. It's not going to be anything left of it. So the knowledge of Shastra is very important to give people the idea of who they are and what their ultimate benefit is. Srila Shukadeva Goswami asserted that there is no use in living hundreds of years without any knowledge of the problems of life. Better to live for a moment with full consciousness of the supreme interest to be fulfilled. Later we'll read these verses like, the tree lives for hundreds of years, but what is the consciousness of the tree? What is the benefit of living for hundreds of years like a tree in ignorance? Better to live a moment in full consciousness. And many of the great saints in India, they lived short lives, but what they achieved in their lifetimes and what they left for the future generations is immense. I think Shankaracharya lived only 32 years, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lived 48 years. So that's not the criterion, how long one lives in the body. The criterion is what one does with one's consciousness. The supreme interest of life is eternal, with full knowledge and bliss. Those who are bewildered by the external features of the material world are engaged in the animal propensities of the eat, drink, and be merry type of life, are simply wasting their lives by the unseen passing away of valuable years. Chanakya Pandit says that at the time of death, when if one wants to prolong one's life even for one moment in exchange for pounds of gold, one cannot do so. In other words, when the time of death comes, if you want to live longer, even by one moment, and you have, you know, millions of dollars in the bank, you cannot pay any number of millions of dollars to prolong your life even one moment. So that means that each moment is invaluable. You can't put a price on each moment. And therefore, we should be conscious of how valuable each moment is and not waste any time outside of Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada had a friend named Mr. Bridge Ratan Mota in Bombay. He was a very wealthy businessman, actually. And Prabhupada spoke to him in the type of language that he could understand, which is the language of a businessman. And he said, if you take the ledger of your life and you have one column for profit and one column for loss, all the time that you spend in relation to Krishna consciousness is gain. And all the time you spend outside of Krishna consciousness is loss. So obviously every businessman wants to maximize his gains and minimize his losses. So we should think like that, that this is our most valuable possession, our most valuable commodity, the lifespan that we have. And therefore we should use it productively, you know, fruitfully, for our ultimate benefit, which is to become Krishna conscious and go back home, back to Godhead. We should know in perfect consciousness that human life is bestowed upon the conditioned soul to achieve spiritual success. And the easiest procedure to attain this end is to chant the holy name of the Lord. So if we understand the basic facts of life, that I'm not the body, I'm the soul, part and parcel of Krishna, and my real relationship is not with the body or things in relation to the body, my real relationship is with Krishna, who is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. And if I revive my relationship with him, then I also enjoy eternal life full of knowledge and bliss. If we have this knowledge, then the next question is, how do I revive my eternal relationship with Krishna? How do I realize my eternal life of knowledge and bliss? So the answer, which was given in the previous verse, is by chanting the holy name of the Lord. And Shastra confirms, Harinama, Harinama, Harinami, Vikevalam. Kalona stevana stevana steva gatiranita. One should chant the holy names, chant the holy names, chant the holy names. There's no other way, no other way, no other way for success in the present age of Kali. We should know in perfect consciousness that human life is bestowed upon the conditioned soul to achieve spiritual success, and the easiest procedure to attain this end is to chant the holy name of the Lord. In the previous verse, we have discussed this point to a certain extent, and we may further be enlightened on the different types of offenses committed unto the feet of the holy name. Yes, the idea is that one can achieve the most wonderful results by chanting the holy names, provided one chants without offense. And therefore, sometimes we need to discuss the offenses so that we can be aware of them and avoid them. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu has quoted many passages from authentic scriptures and has ably supported the statements in the matter of offenses at the feet of the holy name. From Vishnu Yamala Tantra, Srila Jiva Goswami has proven that one can be liberated from the effects of all sins simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord. Now, this is a very important point, because we're all suffering and we all want relief from suffering. And suffering is caused by sin. Our suffering is the reaction to our past sins. So to become free from suffering, we have to become free from sinful reactions. Or to become free from sinful reactions means that we will become free from suffering. So how to become free from sinful reactions? Well, if one chants the holy name of the Lord without offense, one is freed from sinful reactions. One doesn't have to chant perfectly. One doesn't have to chant completely purely. But if one chants without committing offenses, even if one chants trying to avoid the offenses, one becomes free from sinful reactions. And one very good example mentioned in the Shastra is Ajamil. Ajamil was he was actually born in a good Brahmin family, but by bad association he fell down and engaged in sinful activities. But fortunately, he had a son whom he named Narayan. And at the time of death, what was meant to be the time of death, when the agents of Yamaraj, the Yamadutas, were about to come and take his soul from his body and drag him to be punished for his sins, in a mood of complete helplessness, you know, being completely panicked, Ajamil called for his son, who was nearby and to whom he was very attached. So he called Narayan to call his son. But because he uttered the holy name of Lord Narayan at the final moment, the agents of Lord Narayan, the Vishnu Dutas, came and delivered him. So he was not chanting purely, but he was chanting without offense. In other words, he wasn't chanting with some ulterior motive. He wasn't chanting with the idea that let me commit sins and then at the last moment I'll chant the holy name and become freed from the reactions. So the Vishnu Dutas came and they saved him from the Yamadutas and allowed him to live. They allowed him to live. And by the association of the devotees, by the association of the Vishnu Dutas, he became enlightened in the goal of life and in the process to achieve the goal. And so he left home and went to Haridwar, and he chanted the holy name. And then when he became perfect in chanting the holy name, the Vishnu Dutas came again and took him back to Godhead. So if we chant without offense, even if we're not yet perfect, still the effect is that we're saved from hellish punishments, we're saved from sinful reactions, and we're liberated. We're liberated from material attachments. Ajamil had been very attached to his son and wife, but after chanting the holy name without offense in Nam Abbas, he was liberated from his attachments, and so he was able to leave his home. He was already 88 years old. He was able to leave his home and go to Haridwar and achieve the ultimate goal of life. From Vishnu Yamala Tantra, Srila Jiva Goswami has proven that one can be liberated from the effects of all sins simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord. Quoting from the Markandeya Purana, Sri Goswamiji says that one should neither blaspheme the devotee of the Lord nor indulge in hearing others who are engaged in belittling a devotee of the Lord. A devotee should try to restrict the vilifier by cutting out his tongue. And being unable to do so, one should commit suicide rather than hear the blaspheming of the devotee of the Lord. Now this might sound harsh or extreme, but the reason it sounds so harsh to us is because we identify with the body. Actually, the body is just a dress. Our real identity is the soul. And there's nothing worse for the progress of the soul than blaspheming devotees, offending devotees. So if someone is misusing his tongue to blaspheme devotees, it's better to cut out his tongue, because he doesn't know how to use his tongue properly. So it's actually better for him. And if we're unable to stop him, then it's better for us to commit suicide rather than to continue to hear such blasphemy. Because if we commit suicide, there's no problem. We'll continue in our devotional service in our next life from where we left off. But if we continue to hear the blasphemy, then our present life is ruined, and our next life is also ruined, because we're going to carry the reaction to that offense into the next life. There was one great devotee named Bilva Mangal Thakur. He had actually been very advanced in his previous life, but somehow he wasn't completely perfect, and he had to take birth again. And in the next life, he had a weakness that he was attracted by the beauty of women, by the bodies of women. But actually, the story is quite interesting. So he became attached to a prostitute named Chintamani. And the prostitute was actually a devotee. It was somehow she had that occupation that she was a prostitute, but she was actually a devotee. So one night, a very stormy night, Bilva Mangal Thakur was thinking of her and like wanting her company. But to reach her home, he had to cross a raging river, you know, in the middle of the storm. And there was no way to cross because the river was just overflowing its banks. And he saw a dead body floating down the river. And like he used the dead body as a, like a flotation device to cross the river. And then he's like walking, you know, braving the elements, the storm. And he came to the prostitute's house. And the house was surrounded by a wall. And there was no way he could get into the compound. Then he saw a snake. And, you know, he took the dead snake and used it as like a rope to get over the wall. And finally he started, I guess, to throw stones at the window, something to get the prostitute's attention. So she saw, oh, he's come. So she let him in. And she could see how attached he was to her. I mean, to go to such extremes to get to her. So she said, you know, if you had as much attachment for Krishna as you have for me, it would be much better for you. And somehow hearing those words from the prostitute reminded him of the Krishna consciousness that he had developed in the past life but had forgotten. So he took her words to heart and he decided, yes, I'm going to Vrindavan, I'm going to seek out Krishna in Vrindavan. So he began the journey by foot to Vrindavan, and along the way he saw a beautiful woman, and he followed the woman home, and so he knocked at the door. He introduced himself as a Brahmin. He was also from a Brahmin family. He introduced himself and asked for some charity. And when the woman's husband left the room, he started, well, he already had them, but he was, you know, filled with lusty desires for the Brahmin's wife. And he thought, this is no good. You know, this is coming in the way of my spiritual progress. So the wife said, how can I serve you? And he said, well, please give me some pins from your hair. She was surprised, but he asked, so she gave him her hairpins, and he plucked out his eyes. He blinded himself, because he thought, these eyes are just causing me trouble. These eyes are looking at women and arousing lusty desires that are taking me away from Krishna. It's better I don't have these eyes. So he took them out and he became blind. But he was fixed now. There's going to be no more distractions on his path to Krishna. And so he was walking along the way to Vrindavan, singing the praises of Krishna, chanting the name of Krishna. And a young boy came and said, you know, where are you going? Said, I'm going to Vrindavan. And the young boy said, I'm going to Vrindavan too. I'll go with you. So he took Bilva Mangal by the hand and like helped him along the way to Vrindavan. Then when they got to Vrindavan, the boy said, well, now I have to go to my house, and I have to leave you. But by then, Bilva Mangal Thakur realized that the boy was Krishna himself, and he didn't want to let go of him. So he's like holding onto his hand, and the boy was trying to take his hand out. And then finally the boy did take his hand out. And then Bilba Mangal Thakur said, well, you know, you can take yourself out of my hand, but you can't take yourself out of my heart. Mm-hmm. And so he attained perfection in Krishna consciousness. He actually lived a very long life, it just so happens. And he wrote many wonderful books, Krishna Karanamrita, that were appreciated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in his book, in the introductory prayers at the beginning of his book, he writes one verse in appreciation of Chintamani. He considered her to be his guru because she was the one who awakened or reawakened his Krishna consciousness. And it is said that his guru from his past life came and spoke through the prostitute Chintamani to reawaken his Krishna consciousness. Or some people say that he appeared again as Chintamani, but in any case, his guru from his past life gave him the instructions that he needed to hear so that he could continue his Krishna consciousness and reach the goal. So we identify with the body. The whole culture is based on the body. We think, oh, it's terrible, you know. Take out your eyes, cut out your tongue. It sounds like very ghastly. But actually, what is the body? It's just a dress, you know, and if it's getting in the way of our progress, we can cut a bit of it off and discard it if it's going to help us go faster. His Holiness Ratatva Goswami told me in some states now they've passed a law that forbids playing tag in schools. Now, Krishna plays tag with his friends. You know, I think every one of us grew up playing tag. But the idea is that in the games of tag, the fatter children will run slower. So they'll get tagged first. And so they'll develop an inferiority complex. So to save them from developing an inferiority complex, they have now outlawed playing tag in schools in some places. Yeah. They won't. They won't tell them that you're not the body. You know, don't worry about it. Or they won't tell him, you know, teach him to control the senses, you know, teach Krishna prasad instead of whatever's making him fat. Of course, as we last night, Nitya Kishori told a story that when she went to Belgium to study, her spiritual master, His Holiness Tamal Krishna Goswami, phoned her. He was inquiring her. She joined at a relatively young age, and he had a very fatherly mood towards her to, like, care for her. And so, you know, he asked her how the prasadam was. And she, you know, as a good devotee, had learned that you should always honor prasadam, that prasadam is not different from Krishna, so you should always appreciate prasadam. So she was going on and on about how good the prasadam is. And then Tamal Krishna Goswami said, "You're not getting fat, are you?" But generally, one doesn't get fat from eating prasadam. Especially if one dances, chants and dances, and is fully engaged in service. Anyway, so, but the point here, the real point here is that we should not use our tongue to blaspheme devotees. That's the point. And it's better to cut out the tongue than to use the tongue for such harmful activity. The conclusion is that one should neither hear nor allow vilification of a devotee of the Lord. Now, sometimes amongst devotees there might be some disagreement. But that, well, anyway, that's a particular case, but we should avoid, you know, blasphemy. We should avoid speaking it, and we should avoid hearing it. But among devotees, it's a little different, because they just offer obeisances to each other, you know, they apologize, offer obeisances to each other, and carry on with their service. Devotees and brahmanas. Once Srila Prabhupada was giving a lecture, and one of the children started to make noise, and Prabhupada said, you know, please keep the child quiet. So the mother started to sort of chastise the child. And then Prabhupada said that, you know, in Vedic culture, one cannot, one does not punish a child, a young child. So then the husband of the mother started to chastise the mother for chastising the child. So then Prabhupada said, you know, we don't punish women. So then the temple commander started to chastise the husband. And then Prabhupada said, "We don't punish Brahmins." And then he said, "Our whole society is nothing but women and children and Brahmins, so we can't punish anyone." So we just, you know, we just gently correct them and offer obeisances and beg forgiveness and carry on. So that was an indirect reference to the first offense, which is to blaspheme devotees. Now we come to the second offense, which again is not mentioned explicitly, but it deals with the second offense. As far as distinguishing the Lord's holy name from the names of the demigods, the revealed scriptures disclose, Bhagavad Gita 10:41, that all extraordinarily powerful beings are but parts and parcels of the supreme energetic Lord Krishna. Except for the Lord himself, everyone is subordinate. No one is independent of the Lord. Since no one is more powerful than or equal to the energy of the Supreme Lord, no one's name can be as powerful as that of the Lord. By chanting the Lord's holy name, one can derive all the stipulated energy synchronized from other sources. Therefore, one should not equate the supreme holy name of the Lord with any other name. Brahma, Shiva, or any other powerful god can never be equal to the supreme Lord Vishnu. So this is an important point, especially for people coming in the line of Vedic civilization who don't really understand the Vedic conclusions. They think that all the gods are equal and separate, and they think that there's no difference between chanting Hare Krishna and Shiva Shiva or Durga Durga. But often they think that the Supreme is impersonal, and the one impersonal Supreme comes in different forms and shapes as Krishna, Shiva, Durga, and so on. But that is not the fact. And if we think that the holy name of Krishna is, that the names of the demigods are equal to or independent of the holy name of Vishnu, it's an offense, and then we don't get the true benefit of chanting. The powerful holy name of the Lord can certainly deliver one from sinful effects, but one who desires to utilize this transcendental potency of the holy name of the Lord in one's sinister activities is the most degraded person in the world. Such persons are never excused by the Lord or by any agent of the Lord. Like we discussed, if one has committed sinful activities, but then he realizes his mistake, he gets the association of devotees, he realizes his mistake and resolves not to engage in sinful activities anymore, then if he takes shelter of the chanting of the holy names of the Lord, he becomes free from the sinful reactions. But if in a sort of cunning and calculated way one thinks, you know, let me engage in some sinful activity and then I'll just chant Hare Krishna to neutralize the effects, that is an offense. It's the worst offense. And anyone who indulges in that offense doesn't get freed from the reactions by chanting, but rather he becomes more implicated by that offensive mentality. So yes, we may have engaged in sinful activities before we came to the Association of Devotees, and if we sincerely try to avoid them and chant the holy name with attention and without offense, then we will get purified of the sinful reactions. And part of the reaction to sin is that one increases one's desire to engage in the sin. So being freed from the sinful reaction also means being freed from the desire to commit sin. So that's great value of chanting. There are other processes of atonement like taking bath in the Ganges. There are other processes of atonement, but they don't remove the desire for sin. They may remove the reactions, but they don't remove the desire. And it's compared to like weeds. You might cut the weeds, but as long as the root remains in the ground, the weeds will come up again. You have to actually pull the root out. So these other forms of atonement, like taking vows, performing austerities, bathing in the Ganges, prayaschitta, there's a whole system of this atonement will neutralize this sin, that atonement will neutralize that sin. It may remove the immediate reaction to the sin, but it won't remove the desire to commit the sin, and therefore the person will commit sin again. It is compared to hati snan, the bathing of an elephant. An elephant will take very nice bath in the lake or the river, but then as soon as the elephant comes out, the elephant will roll around in the mud again. So what was the use of taking the bath? So in the same way, we may cleanse ourselves of sinful reactions by prayaschitta, by atonement. But as long as we keep the desire to sin, you know, we'll sin again and we'll again face the reactions to the sin. So it's like the bathing of an elephant. It has no use. Chanting removes the desire for sin. One should, therefore, utilize one's life in glorifying the Lord by all means, without any offense. Such activity of life, even for a moment, can never be compared to a prolonged life of ignorance, like the lives of the trees and other living entities who may live for thousands of years without prosecuting spiritual advancement. So that's the conclusion. That's the special facility we have in the human form of life, that we can understand who we are, who is God, what is the material body, what is the material world, what is our relationship with God, what is our goal in life, and how to reestablish our relationship with God and reach the goal in life. And the main process is the chanting of the holy names of the Lord without offense. So, as Srila Prabhupada said, the process is very easy, but the determination to maintain the process is not so easy. We have to be determined. The Bhagavad Gita says that those who are too attached to sense gratification, they never develop the resolute determination to engage in Krishna consciousness, and their intelligence is bahusaka, it's many branched. But those who are resolute in their purpose, they're single-minded in their determination to make progress. So we should cultivate that, and the way to cultivate that is through the association of pure devotees. We associate with pure devotees, follow their instructions, chant and hear in their association, and serve under their guidance, and we can very easily become Krishna conscious in this very life. Srila Prabhupada said that association is 90% of Krishna consciousness. And therefore we have ISKCON, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, so people can associate with pure devotees and become pure devotees. Go back home, back to Godhead. Hare Krishna. So, are there any questions or comments? Yes?
For one who has heard blasphemy of devotees, what things can one do to eradicate contamination?
If one has heard Nityananda Chandra Prabhu asks, if one has heard blasphemy of devotees, what can one do to counteract the contamination from hearing it? Well, hearing blasphemy also counts as blasphemy. Hearing an offense also counts as an offense. And if one continues to chant the holy name without committing further offenses, one can get relief. But, a lot depends on the mood. You know, everything depends on the mood. Sometimes, we actually like to hear criticism of devotees because it makes us feel good. It makes us feel that we're better than they are. It's good that people are recognizing their faults. Then eventually they'll realize it's me. You know, I'm the real, true devotee here. And they're not going to be diverted to all these others. So if that's our mood, then there's more of an implication in the offense. But in general, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has advised that we should avoid the negative by the positive. In other words, yes, the negative prohibition is that we should not speak ill of devotees or hear blasphemy of devotees. But the positive injunction is that we should appreciate devotees and glorify devotees and serve them. So, and the two go together. So if you've, again, depending on the situation and the other devotee, you could go to the other devotee and say, I heard this, and, unfortunately I got into it, but that's one approach, but that could make things worse, because up until now the devotee might not know about it, and the devotee might get worried. But if not that, then like within your heart you could like pray to be forgiven and go out of your way to appreciate that devotee and glorify that devotee. And maybe, again, depending on who the person is, go back to the person and say that actually, and then like point out the good in the devotee, and then maybe inform the person or remind the person that speaking like this about devotees is very bad for their spiritual life and they shouldn't do it. But you shouldn't just let it go. You should do something about it. Yeah. To make an active effort. Yes, Sucharya Mataji?
When you were speaking about Srila Prabhupada and how he asked the members to be gentle with each other, and it reminded me of Srila Prabhupada in 1975 when he was in Mayapur. and the girl was doing Guru Puja, and all the little boys were paying obeisances, like making dives and paying obeisances to Prabhupada. And somehow they were so enthusiastic that they ended up putting their feet towards Prabhupada. And so their teachers came marching over and yanked them around, like forcefully, like grabbed their feet and pulled them around. And Prabhupada put his hand up and said, no. He said, gentle persuasion with the boys. So I just reminded me of that when you spoke about the instance of the...
Yes. Gentle persuasion. But I must tell you something interesting that I recently learned. At the most sacred place of Radhakund, there are many ashrams and bhajan kutirs of many great acharyas in our line. So one of the acharyas who had an ashram there was Srinivas Acharya. And we sing his, he wrote these beautiful prayers, Sat Goswami Astakam. So within the ashram, there was a beam, wooden beam. And Srinivas Acharya had great faith in the power of Ekadasi, fasting completely from food and drink on Ekadasi and staying up all night. So he would have his disciples tie their sikas to the beam under this roof so that if they dozed off while they were trying to stay up all night to observe Ekadasi, they would get yanked on their sikha and wake up. Now, this of course is not at all to minimize what you said. What you said was perfectly right. We should use gentle persuasion. They voluntarily accepted that discipline. They accepted him as their spiritual master. They knew what his standards were, and they accepted it for their spiritual benefit. So I think this comes back to the point that we saw in yesterday's slideshow, but it's a common maxim that we should be strict with ourselves and lenient with others. So, yeah, we should. But even with ourselves, you know, we shouldn't be too hard on ourselves. It can also be have negative effects. But yeah, that's very true. With devotees, we should use gentle persuasion, humble persuasion. Yes, Shakshi Gopal?
I thought if you kill yourself, you turn into a ghost.
Yes, Shakshi Gopal says he thought that if we kill ourselves, we turn into a ghost. There's truth to that. In general cases, people commit suicide, ordinary people commit suicide when they're like frustrated in their materialistic life. You know, they had so many desires and their desires were unfulfilled, and they feel so disappointed they just want to give up their life. So people who like that, they can take birth as ghosts, because we get the body that we desire. I mean, that by our actions we show that we desire and deserve. So someone who commits suicide, it means that he doesn't want to have a material body. But the reason he committed suicide is because he was so frustrated and disappointed in life. So he has the material desires, but he didn't want a material body. So he takes birth as a ghost. He doesn't have a gross physical body, but he still has the material desires. So he's even more frustrated.
Do you ever turn back into a
eventually one can become a human, especially if one, you know, gets the association of devotees and hears the holy name and maybe gets the chance to smell the aroma of the incense or tulsi leaves offered to the Lord. But yeah, it's a very miserable life to be a ghost. Very miserable life. Because they have these material desires and they don't have a gross physical body, so they try to possess other people's bodies so they can enjoy through the other people's bodies. So they cause a lot of disturbance. Cause a lot of disturbance. And then they have to take birth again. They have to go back to the way they were before they committed suicide. Prabhupada gives the example. It's like if you're serving a term in prison, and then you escape from prison, then when you're caught, you still have to serve the term that you were in for in the first place, but on top of it, you get another sentence for the crime of trying to escape unlawfully. So they get extra punishment as a ghost, and then they still have to finish the term of suffering that they were destined in the previous body. But this is different. This, we're doing it for our spiritual advancement. I mean, I don't... That actually... There is a point here that if one is a Brahmin, even if one hears blasphemy, one should not take one's life, because one would be guilty of killing a Brahmin. So if one is a Brahmin, one wouldn't commit suicide, but one would try to purify oneself by taking shelter of the holy name and, you know, trying to serve Vaishnavas and glorify Vaishnavas and so on. Good to be a Brahmin. By qualification. Any other questions or comments? All right, so we'll have some more kirtan and then prasad. Or Jaswat Prabhu. We are honored to have a very senior disciple of Srila Prabhupada's and powerful kirtan singer with us today, or Jaswat Prabhu. We will request him to lead the kirtan.